Audiohuis.
NBC News has learned that disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein is dead. Epstein took his own life while he was behind bars, facing charges of sex trafficking.
Jeffrey Epstein's sudden death on August 10th, 2019, dominated headlines around the world.
Law enforcement officials say Jeffrey Epstein abused dozens of girls, some as young as 14.
For those who knew him, Epstein's towering ego dominated every part of his secretive life.
Epstein believed he was a king of Wall Street, of women, of justice.
But many saw Epstein as a fraud.
Jeffrey Epstein will probably be the greatest con man the world has ever seen.
Just 6 days after Epstein's death, the New York City Medical Examiner released a statement that his death was a suicide by hanging. But Epstein's full autopsy was withheld from the public, immediately fueling speculation.
Very few people in America, even the president, believed that Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide.
He was connected to some of the richest and most influential people in the world.
From Prince Andrew to Bill Clinton and Donald Trump, he would rub shoulders with the elite.
He probably did know too much. People are suspicious that he was murdered.
Jeffrey Epstein's death was as mysterious and controversial as his life. Was his imminent trial enough to push him to suicide, or are the conspiracies to be believed? Was he silenced before he could implicate others? With access to his medical evidence, world-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is going to investigate what has happened and see whether this sheds new light on how Jeffrey Epstein died. You are listening to Autopsy, the podcast. In this series, we analyze the medical evidence in order to understand the precise cause of the tragic, controversial and sudden deaths of various celebrities. This is episode 2, The Last Hours of Jeffrey Epstein. Dr. Michael Hunter is one of America's most preeminent medical examiners and in his two-decade career has investigated hundreds of prison deaths. He's uniquely positioned to get to the truth about the death of Jeffrey Epstein.
Jeffrey Epstein's full autopsy report was not released to the public. Nevertheless, by using the available medical information, victim accounts, and law enforcement records, I'll create a picture of Epstein's life right up to his last days, hours, and minutes, and I'll piece together what really caused his death in a Manhattan prison cell.
It's July 6, 2019, Teterboro Airport, New Jersey. 6 weeks before his death, Jeffrey Epstein has been out of the country for 3 weeks when his private jet lands back on U.S. soil direct from Paris. Teterboro is where all the rich and famous fly in and out of. It is well known as a private jet airport. Jeffrey Epstein had no idea what was awaiting him, tells Dylan Howard, co-author of Epstein, Dead Men Tell No Tales.
He was swarmed by FBI agents who took him into federal custody immediately.
The FBI arrests Jeffrey Epstein on charges of trafficking underage girls for sex. If convicted, Epstein could face 45 years in prison.
This is probably one of the most serious crimes recorded in the history of abuse of underage girls in the United States of America. And Epstein did not care.
This is Stephen Hoffenberg, former CEO of Towers Financial Corporation, a company where Epstein used to work.
He had no moral compass.
2 days later, in a New York court, Epstein pleads not guilty to the sex trafficking charges, but he will never stand trial. Epstein's death a month later closed the criminal case against him, but over the next several weeks, many of his victims, now in their 30s, reached out to share their accounts.
I was entrapped in a world that I didn't understand.
Before I knew what was happening, he grabbed onto my wrist and tugged me towards the bed. All I could say was a meek, "No, please stop."
Sexual predators like Jeffrey Epstein arouse powerful emotions in the public, and his relentless exploitation of vulnerable girls is difficult to relate to. But to understand his death, I need to explore the roots of his warped behavior.
Jeffrey Edward Epstein was born on January the 20th, 1953, and grew up in Seagate, New York City's oldest gated community. His parents had very humble jobs. His father worked in parks, and his mother was a school aide.
We were all lower middle class kids growing up in the same, more or less same area.
This is James Rosen, a childhood friend of Epstein. They attended the same high school.
I would see him in the hallway and say hi, and he'd say hi. He was nothing special. His group of friends were the nerd kids, the kids that were good in math and science. His thing was math. He was a brilliant math student. He passed everybody by in high school.
But teenage Epstein was not a hit with female students.
I never saw him with any girls. The girls back then, they liked the jocks, the football players, the baseball players. They wanted the man's man, you know. There was no machismo in being a nerdy Jewish kid.
Epstein's school days are unremarkable. Only years later do we see signs of what he might become. After dropping out of college in 1973, Epstein became a mathematics teacher at prestigious prep school Dalton on Manhattan's Upper East Side. The 21-year-old made an immediate impression in the conservative co-ed school, remembers Maud Britt, a former student who was 15 years old when Epstein arrived.
He wore weird polyester shirts with weird patterns and tabs. John Travolta 5 years before Saturday Night Fever. He had this big fluffy fur coat. I don't know if it was real or if it was fake. I found it kind of smarmy.
Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, psychologist.
What we see here is somebody who's trying to adopt a personality that's much more flamboyant and perhaps appealing to the students, which are, of course, young girls that he found attractive.
The medical examiner designated Epstein's death as suicide.
Says Dr. Michael Hunter.
I need to understand her reasoning, and the death scene itself will offer vital clues. According to law enforcement officials, Epstein was alone in his cell, on his knees with a noose made from a bedsheet around his neck, tied to the bunk bed. And this might not fit with the popular idea of hanging, where the person is fully suspended and the feet are off the ground, but it is perfectly possible to kill yourself in this position. Pressure of Epstein's own body weight leaning against the ligature would have been enough to impair blood flow in the neck and compromise his airway. So, judging from the reported positioning of Epstein's body and the presence of a ligature, I can appreciate why the medical examiner would figure this to be a suicide. But there are still unanswered questions.
This morning, new details about the death of accused sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein, revealing that among the bones broken in Epstein's neck was the hyoid bone.
Reports that Epstein had fractures to his neck appeared to cast doubt on the medical examiner's conclusions.
The hyoid bone is positioned high in the neck and protects the larynx and windpipe. And in a case of suspicious hanging, the medical examiner will scrutinize the area around the hyoid because it can be a critical clue in determining the manner of death. But interpreting any fracture is complex.
In a classical suicidal hanging, the rope tightens under the jaw above the position of the hyoid bone, so it's likely to be undamaged. Whereas in a ligature strangulation, the force is often applied right over the hyoid area, and so fractures are more likely. If a broken hyoid bone is a litmus test for homicide, was Epstein's death really an assassination?
The reality is that because a broken hyoid bone occurs in both suicidal hanging and homicide by strangulation, such a break by itself would normally prove nothing. But in the autopsy summary, I see two additional fractures to the thyroid cartilage located just below the hyoid bone. Now, to me, this is a red flag because it suggests deadly force has also been applied to a broader area lower down the neck. A scenario more likely in homicidal strangulation. However, I think the death scene offers an explanation. Epstein was 6 feet tall and the bunk bed was about 5 feet high, which means that the angled ligature was relatively shallow. So it was less likely to be pulled above the hyoid area by the weight of his body. Also, Epstein used a ligature made from a torn sheet rather than a rope, which means pressure could be applied over a wide enough area to impact the hyoid and nearby cartilage. I believe that the type of ligature and the way it was used could explain the injuries to Epstein's neck. Nevertheless, these fractures are unusual, and I can't rule out strangulation. So both suicide and homicide are still in play.
It's July 8th, 2019, Metropolitan Correctional Center, New York City. He has just pleaded not guilty to trafficking underage girls for sex. And pending his bail hearing and trial, he's being held in one of the most secure prisons in the U.S. Recent inmates include drug lord El Chapo and financial fraudster Bernie Madoff.
MCC Manhattan was built probably 40-some years ago for 475 people, and I think it houses now over 800.
This is Laura Goldman, journalist and stockbroker.
Rats are your roommates there.
Jeffrey Epstein's assigned a cell in the special housing unit.
Epstein went from his gilded mansion, his private planes, his own island, to sharing a cell with a former police officer that was in for four murders.
In prison, sex offenders are often targeted for violence and extortion, and Epstein's notoriety makes him especially vulnerable. So it's highly likely that Epstein will be focusing all his energy and considerable resources on beating the case against him, on getting out of prison by whatever means.
In the days immediately after Epstein's arrest, several of the girls that he'd abused started receiving envelopes of cash. It was a response to the New York prosecutor's TV appeal for new victims to come forward to testify against Epstein.
A friend told me about this guy. I was short on rent 1 month. Told me that all I had to do was give him a massage and he would give me $200.
I tried to tear off my shirt and I was shaking really bad. He sent me over the table and put himself in me without my permission.
Most striking from the victim's accounts is his amazing lack of empathy, right? So their feelings didn't matter, only his. And for me, this is a red flag that speaks to a personality disorder.
Psychologist Dr. Linda Papadopoulos again.
He could have antisocial personality disorder. For these individuals, shame, guilt, remorse mean absolutely nothing. So another possibility, however, is that he could have narcissistic personality disorder. Narcissistic personality disorder is a forensic term to describe someone who has not just an inflated ego, but a huge disregard for other people around them, and actually really, really low and fragile self-esteem that he can only cope with by this hyper-inflated sense of who he is.
In 1976, at the age of 23, Epstein got a job with a Wall Street trader and made an immediate impact. According to Stephen Hoffenberg, the CEO of Towers Financial Corporation, he was able to win over clients through his charm.
He was a genius in selling investments. He was extraordinarily great in getting under your skin.
Jeffrey Epstein winds up in Wall Street, which is kind of the perfect place for him because people with personality disorders think they're natural salespeople. They can charm, they can read a room, and also they're ruthless. They're happy to bend rules, they're happy to lie.
Epstein's ruthlessness caught the eye of other Wall Street players, including Stephen Hoffenberg.
Towers Financial was in the business of selling investments, bonds to investors around the world. Epstein came on board in 87.
According to Hoffenberg, Epstein became the mastermind behind an illegal pyramid selling scam, which seduced an ever-expanding group of investors with promises of astronomical returns on their money. Investors believed their money was being invested, yet it was not. It was simply being used to pay out dividends to other participants of the scam. The rest of the investors' money was pocketed by Towers Financial and Epstein.
You're talking about $1 billion of investments and $1.5 billion of collections every year. And Epstein was making a great deal of money.
By the early 90s, Epstein was a multimillionaire, and his mysterious wealth had become a source of fascination on Wall Street, recalls journalist and stockbroker Laura Goldman.
I met Jeffrey Epstein in Manhattan in the 90s. I thought possibly he could be potentially a client. He might have contacts that would be useful to me. What I remember is he doesn't look you in the eye. He can be very charming if he needs you. If he doesn't want to answer your questions, he kind of makes a dirty joke and the conversation moves on to a different level.
Epstein was an expert at or in creating a smokescreen to hide his dealings, but eventually Towers Financial's pyramid scam collapsed. And in 1996, Hoffenberg was jailed for fraud, serving 18 years behind bars.
I was stupid. I was convinced by Epstein the rules did not apply. As the CEO, I allowed Epstein to break the rules. That made me liable and responsible for Epstein.
Jeffrey Epstein wasn't indicted. He got away scot-free, tells author Dylan Howard.
Anyone that got embroiled with him in a financial sense, most of them will say that they were ripped off by Jeffrey Epstein.
Any murder needs a motive, and Jeffrey Epstein's ruthless disregard for others would be a recipe for creating enemies.
And Epstein's history of paedophilia also made him a target for rough treatment.
Quite frankly, child sex offenders behind bars are not liked in the first instance. The treatment he received from the guards was equally as brutal.
To understand Epstein's death, I need to know more about his lifestyle in the years before his arrest.
In the 90s, Epstein used his wealth to gain access to elite social circles.
He would host banquets and dinner parties at his New York residence. He would rub shoulders with the elite of Manhattan.
Epstein's most influential friends even had access to his private jet.
Jeffrey Epstein quickly understands rich people are cheap and they love free things.
Journalist and stockbroker Laura Goldman again.
He understood that his planes were a weapon in his arsenal to gain acceptance.
Epstein appears to have been embraced by elite society, but behind the scenes, he was now routinely abusing underage girls in Manhattan, Florida, and beyond. Epstein often flew girls to his 70-acre private island in the Caribbean. The trips were so common that locals called Epstein's jet the Lolita Express. To ensure a supply of new girls, Epstein groomed his victims to entice their school friends into his abusive world. In a police interview, one of the victims describes her experience.
How many girls have you brought to?
A lot.
A lot?
Right. Remember, those girls brought other girls too. It's like a train. It's like I introduce them to all my friends, okay, and they'll bring her friends, and then she'll bring her friends. It goes on and on like that.
When this happened, who else was underage out of all these?
Underage, what do you mean?
Like under 18?
Under 18? All of them.
All of them?
All of them.
Epstein's obsession with control went even further.
Many of these young girls were being plied with drugs that kept them almost locked to the Epstein situation. He would drug young women to keep them as part of his network.
Some of Epstein's victims reported that they were sometimes drugged with anti-anxiety medications like Xanax, even lithium. These medications are not commonly prescribed to teenagers, and their use is certainly a disturbing feature of Epstein's abusive regime. But also, the availability of drugs at his houses makes me wonder if Epstein himself abused drugs.
Almost half of jail suicides have a history of substance abuse. In a photograph taken in Epstein's cell after his death, several medicine bottles and boxes can be seen on the bunk. But on closer inspection, these include over-the-counter medications like milk of magnesia used to treat constipation.
Any suspicious toxicology findings would certainly have been noted in the autopsy summary. So I don't see any evidence Epstein was abusing drugs in jail.
In fact, the account suggests that Epstein was puritanical when it came to his own health. He wouldn't drink, he wouldn't smoke. It's July 15th, 2019, Metropolitan Correctional Center, New York City. Jeffrey Epstein returns to his prison cell after his bail application was rejected by the courts. He'll now remain in the special housing unit until his trial in 10 months.
Jeffrey Epstein thought that he had a chance at bail because he'd gotten away with everything his whole life.
And the impact would have been huge because, don't forget, his narcissism would have always made him feel that, no, it'll be fine. So for a guy obsessed with control, this was a really tough place to be.
The refusal of bail is a recognized trigger for self-harm in jail and would certainly have an impact on Epstein's mood. But I'm also interested in the background to the judge's decision, who said that Mr. Epstein poses ongoing and forward-looking danger to young girls. When I take a closer look at his indictment, the charges refer to allegations dating back to 2005 and earlier. I see that Epstein was actually sent to jail in 2008 for sex crimes during that same period.
Jeffrey Epstein went to jail just before 10 this morning. He pleaded guilty in open court.
Believe it or not, this entire case started from a complaint of a 14-year-old girl. Once it was known that somebody made a complaint, others came forward.
For 2 years, Palm Beach, Florida police built a case involving dozens of girls. But then Epstein's legal team struck a plea deal with the prosecutor. Epstein was given immunity from federal prosecution and pleaded guilty to lesser state charges of soliciting and procuring a minor for prostitution.
Instead of going to jail for 25 to 30 years, he was given a 13-month custody sentence and then 5 months of house arrest, which is ridiculous.
But Epstein's power to influence didn't end there. For most of his sentence, he was allowed out of jail for 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, to go to work, where it's alleged he would sometimes be visited by young girls flown down from New York.
He was allowed to go to his office or hotel rooms where he may actually have been able to continue on with these heinous crimes unchecked by the judicial system.
In Epstein's sort of distorted world, this would be the ultimate revenge, because in his view, he would have manipulated the entire justice system to get what he wanted.
It's July 23rd, 2019, Metropolitan Correctional Center, New York City. Epstein will be dead in 18 days. The harsh regime of the special housing unit is a stark contrast to the easy ride Epstein engineered in Florida.
He wanted preferential treatment and he didn't get it. This must have felt like he was being trapped.
Epstein's world has shrunk to a single jail cell shared with an alleged killer, and some have pointed out that he was now a sitting duck for murder.
And in Epstein's custody reports, one dramatic incident stands out.
It's 1:30 a.m., July 24th, 2019, Metropolitan Correctional Center, New York City. Prison guards respond to a disturbance in Epstein's cell. He was found semi-conscious and bruised, so is journalist Laura Goldman.
Nobody actually knows what's happening. The roommate swears that they didn't have a fight and that he didn't touch.
The official record of what happened has never been released, and witness accounts are confused, but we do know Epstein was taken for treatment for minor neck injuries.
Significantly, from my investigation, the custody records show that Epstein was put on suicide watch following this incident. If this was a suicide attempt, it makes it more likely that his ultimate death was suicide. But the evidence for attempted suicide here is sketchy, and I know that self-harm is often used by prisoners as a ploy to get moved to better living conditions.
As a narcissist, Jeffrey doesn't ever want to be seen as a victim. And yet, in this case, he's willing to kind of override that to get an easier ride. Perhaps what we're starting to see here is Epstein kind of starting to crumble.
It's July 25th, 2019. Jeffrey Epstein has 16 days to live. Whatever the circumstances of the incident that gave Epstein a bruised neck, he's immediately moved to suicide watch.
Suicide watch is the worst of the worst. You're kept in a 9x12 cell with only paper clothing. Somebody is sitting outside your cell 24 hours a day. You have no exercise, nothing.
Witnesses say Epstein started sleeping on the floor and stopped washing.
Every single day, he looked worse. He was drawn out. He looked unkept.
It's August 9th, 2019, one day to his death. After a week on suicide watch, Epstein was redesignated as a low risk of suicide and brought back to a cell in the special housing unit. From here, he's allowed to meet with his legal team as often as he likes to prepare his defense.
Epstein's lawyers said that they were spending hours with him in his final days on Earth. And by being with his lawyers, he was able to escape from the vermin-infested cell.
Witnesses say that Epstein rarely spoke and mostly watched TV. But today, the news is not just a distraction.
Records from an alleged victim tonight show more about the fallout and scandal involving Jeffrey Epstein. This case
will continue. The lawyers are horrified to hear that more than 2,000 pages of documents detailing lurid allegations of Epstein's sexual abuse of underage girls had been unsealed to the public. Despite the bad news, Epstein seemed untroubled. It's August 10th, 2019, the early hours of the morning. Epstein is alone in his cell. The special housing unit is supervised by two guards during the night shift. And Epstein's cell is supposed to be checked every 30 minutes. But tonight, the checks are missed because both guards are asleep. 6:30 a.m., August 10th, 2019.
NBC News has learned that disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein is dead.
There was disbelief that the biggest, baddest government in the world could not keep one man safe.
It beggars belief that somebody whom 2 weeks earlier had attempted suicide would not be watched like a hawk.
Epstein's autopsy report has not been released, but the medical examiner designated Epstein's death as suicide. However, I see evidence that adds a new dimension to the case.
On the day of Epstein's arrest in July 2019, police began a series of raids on his houses, and FBI agents were seen carrying computers and recording devices from the properties. It emerged that as far back as 2006, Epstein had surveillance cameras hidden in bedrooms and bathrooms.
There is no doubt that Jeffrey Epstein was running a classic honey trap operation.
Author Dylan Howard again.
One in which he would gather dirt and intelligence on individuals and use it as leverage.
Blackmail would have been something really appealing to someone with narcissistic personality disorder like Epstein because it's a tool for control.
Says psychologist Dr. Linda Papadopoulos.
I know something about you. I can make you do what I want. I'm more powerful than you. Perfect.
But what Epstein thought was the ace up his sleeve may have been his downfall.
In any suspicious death, when I see evidence of blackmail, I have to seriously consider the possibility of homicide. Is this the smoking gun I've been looking for?
Billionaires, politicians, even supermodels.
We're talking about an alleged sex ring involving some well-known names that are now released to the world.
People are suspicious that Jeffrey Epstein was murdered because if he had lived to talk, it might have harmed the reputation of many of the world's elite.
The conspiracy theories excited a lot of press interest. But in my experience, a homicide in a prison cell should leave a distinctive trail of evidence. Evidence I don't see in this case. First of all, it is extraordinarily difficult to completely control and strangle a fit adult male in an altercation if they are resisting the attack. There would have been noise and commotion, and it's likely everybody on the wing would have heard it. And then there is a lack of physical evidence. If Epstein was strangled, when I take a closer look at photographs taken during the autopsy, I'd expect to see massive hemorrhaging of the muscles in the neck. I'd also be looking for injuries above and below the ligature mark that would suggest a struggle. And none of these are present.
The biggest blow to murder conspiracy theories came in November 2019 when two prison guards were indicted for falsifying logs to cover their negligence. Security camera evidence proved that they had not done their scheduled checks on Epstein's cell. That same camera also showed that no one could have visited Epstein's cell on the night he died.
Camera evidence almost certainly means that Epstein died alone. And beyond the lack of evidence for homicide, there is good evidence that Epstein had been planning his suicide for some time.
It's August 8th, 2019, Metropolitan Correctional Center, the lawyer's meeting room. 2 days before his death, Epstein wrote his last will and testament. He put his entire fortune into a trust in the Virgin Islands.
By this stage, we were having a significant number of victims line up to tell their story. It prevented them from getting any access to his fortune through civil cases.
And that's what you'd expect a person with narcissistic personality disorder to do as a final act of control. I think it's clear that Epstein is planning to kill himself.
Everything I've seen points towards suicide. But the question still remains, what finally tipped Epstein over the edge?
The answer could lie in Epstein's strange and fateful decision to return to the US in July 2019, even though he knew his history of sexual exploitation was being scrutinized again in the press.
In his mind, he'd already done his time, if you like, for the crimes back in the late 2000s and never felt that he would be charged again because of the United States double jeopardy laws.
Double jeopardy is a legal defense that prevents an accused person from being tried again on the same charges following a valid acquittal or conviction. And Epstein was convinced that he could not be charged with any of the same sexual assaults that he plea bargained away in 2008. But that changed 6 days after Epstein's arrest.
Some breaking news now. Labor Secretary Alexander Acosta has resigned. He was under a lot of scrutiny for the deal that he struck with Jeffrey Epstein.
When the prosecutor who had struck Epstein's 2008 plea deal was forced to resign from President Trump's cabinet, Epstein realized that his double jeopardy defense was blown.
When Acosta resigned, there was no more protection at all.
I think that suicide became a viable option for Epstein when he realized that his defense argument was almost certain to fail.
I think because of his narcissism, he'd rather die than face the shame of having to go to court and be confronted with the reality of what he did.
I'm satisfied that Epstein killed himself. But for me, there is still one mystery surrounding his death. For someone recently on suicide watch, writing a will was such a clear indication that he was about to kill himself. It baffles me why this clue was ignored. It's the one thing that suggests that others might have been involved in his death by deciding not to intervene in his obvious suicide plan. It's an anomaly that will probably remain unresolved.
Meanwhile, Epstein's victims are left in limbo.
One thing is for certain. The victims of Jeffrey Epstein did not get justice.
Thank you for listening to the last hours of Jeffrey Epstein. In the next episode, we'll investigate the death of Andy Warhol. Autopsy, the podcast, is produced by ITV Studios and Audio House. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to leave a review on your favorite podcast app.